Hello and welcome to Well, Don't Just Stand There. I'm Johan, your host, and we've been on a short hiatus. A long short hiatus, but we're back. And this episode we will be talking about VR and AR, virtual reality and augmented reality. All of the big players are showing off their goods. We have commercial products coming from Oculus, owned by Facebook. We have a commercial virtual reality headset coming from HTC called the Vive, built with the help of Valve software. We have a PlayStation 3 headset, codenamed the Morpheus. We have augmented reality coming from Microsoft in the form of HoloLens. We have Magic Leap and a coterie of other very interesting players in the field. But I'm going to kick off by talking about Apple and their standoff with the FBI about changing their software to allow it to be more easily hacked into for security reasons. That's coming up right now. At the offset, it seems like a reasonable request. The FBI has in its possession the phones of the two San Bernardino shooters, and they apparently no longer have access to those phones. So what they are presenting now is an order to Apple to allow them to get into those phones, which at the offset seems like a reasonable thing to ask. Now, it's in the execution of this that things get really hairy. The FBI wants Apple to make it easier for them to do what is called a brute force attack. Allow them to try as many combinations as possible with no limitations to get the PIN code of the iPhone and to get access to it. Now, the phone at some point while in the FBI's custody was a reset. What they want to ask Apple for is to release a specific version of their operating system, load it into this phone, and basically roll back some of the security protections that prevent the phone from being accessed this way. Now, that gets really nefarious because the law covering this area of tech security simply does not exist. Now, the FBI is referencing something called the All Writs Act, which is hundreds of years old and basically provides for the FBI to use their best discretion to access this data and to compel Apple to act on their behalf. Now, the All Writs Act of the Judiciary Act of 1789 is the law of the land in this situation, because it has a clause that says if there is no law that covers this, it defaults to this All Writs Act. So that is what they are trying to use to compel Apple to write the software update. Now, this is a really, really slippery slope. If the government is able to compel them to do this for this security reason, or what they claim is a security reason, despite the fact that it was their fault that the phone is no longer inaccessible, they are now going to be able to compel, by law, a U.S. company to weaken the security of every single iPhone. Now, this exploit will be able to work on other phones. Obviously, Apple will probably work rapidly to create software and hardware limitations that will prevent this from happening again in the future. Ideally, Apple wants to have a system in their encryption implementation that doesn't allow them the ability to interfere in their own security. The ultimate end-to-end encryption means Apple should have no way of reversing it, short of basically obliterating the security completely or destroying all of the data that is being encrypted. Now, Tim Cook has released an open letter to all of Apple's customers explaining their stance and why they're taking the stand on this particular issue. They're being very publicly challenged in the courts to make this change to their software, and they're very eager to not have to comply. There's a lot of steps that have gone wrong on the law enforcement side, and this sets a very large precedent. Among other things, the rest of the world, Europe, South America, and especially Asia, with countries like China, look to America to see what is acceptable and where they can push boundaries when it comes to security and technology. Now, if we allow this to happen in the United States, to compel Apple to, on purpose, create weaker software to allow the government access, this is carte blanche for governments in countries like China to say, look, the US has provided good reasons to compel this company to comply and to weaken the security of these devices. Why should we not have the same ability? And of course, they will, behind closed doors, in private, decide what is a matter of national security. Much less transparent regimes in the world will use this as a precedent. So Tim Cook standing up for this particular issue, I think, is incredibly important. The rest of the country does not quite agree. 51% of people polled said that Apple should have to unlock the phone. But of course, the question isn't, should Apple undermine the security of all iPhone operating systems and introduce a precedent for them to comply to all similar requests in the future? It is, should they unlock the phone or should they not unlock the phone? And I don't think a lot of people in the public fully understand the implications of setting this kind of precedent. To a lot of people, it would seem, well, just unlock the phone, just do it this one time. But this opens the door for all kinds of changes to all kinds of software that you have. To say nothing of the fact that an iPhone contains an unbelievable amount of data, and it is the first touch point for most people when it comes to banking, when it comes to a lot of their health information, all of their friends, often sensitive business information. To have strong security in that device and in that operating system is incredibly important. We might not have it everywhere else in our lives, but as a competitive advantage, Apple has wanted to keep incredibly tight security standards for their own hardware and software. And we should support them, I think, in setting the tone and setting the precedent that the government should not be able to compel companies to make you less safe just for a one-off issue. That's not to say that I'm not gravely concerned with the terrorism issue, but they shouldn't unravel the privacy and security of hundreds of millions of Americans for one instance of potential good. Now, another good thing about Tim Cook making this open letter is he has essentially forced the hand of the rest of the tech industry in the United States. He has received supportive comments to their stance from Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, and also from Sundar Pichai, who is the CEO now of Google. And they have both said that they think that this is an area of concern, and that setting precedents here and creating law in this area is very delicate. It's setting the precedent that companies can enable hacking to compromise security for a security reason is maybe not the best idea in the world. In the 1980s movie They Live, Rowdy Roddy Piper was urging a friend to put on the glasses. Glasses that were showing the world for what it really was. All kinds of terrifying subliminal messaging and the world being run by crazy skull-faced aliens. And now we're going to be asking you to put on the goggles. Not to see the world as it really is, but to see the world as it completely is not. The virtual world. Virtual reality. And even augmented reality. If you've had your pulse on the tech community over the past couple of days, you will have noticed that just about everyone has announced something to do with virtual reality or augmented reality. 2016 is the coming out year for a lot of this technology. And for VR, this is the year where it comes to actual retail, where end consumers will be able to plug in and jack into a virtual reality world. Oculus is releasing a headset and they are now a subsidiary of Facebook. They were acquired for a couple billion dollars last year, much to some people's surprise. But Facebook is incredibly long on this bet, and they think that VR is going to be one of the defining social and digital experiences of the coming few decades. And alongside that is the big bet and the big opportunity of augmented reality, which Microsoft is very much into. Google is also. They have invested in several companies with a substantial amount of money in their augmented reality glasses, which project virtual 3D objects, or 2D, onto your actual field of vision and allow you to not only interact, but to manipulate these items. Imagine being able to overlay your entire apartment with different colors for all of your walls. So long as you're wearing these augmented reality glasses, they will figure out where you are in the room, figure out where the wall is, and always in your field of vision, that wall will be pink if you decide that it is. Whereas a virtual reality headset places you fully and completely in a manufactured world, where the only basis it has in reality is if you walk too far, you might hit a bookcase. That is not being displayed in your actual headset. This is not going to be the breakout year for either of these technologies. Even for VR, which has two headsets coming out now who have their prices. And part of the reason is the price. The Oculus Rift headset, the consumer version, is going to retail for $699, which is not cheap. That's in the ballpark of what the original iPhone launched for. And the HTC Vive headset is going to launch for $799. Again, not cheap. Although these are supposed to be pretty polished and pretty compelling experiences. Now, the untold cost of these devices, you're going to need a really hefty computer to run this thing. To push all of these pixels, to create this very convincing virtual world, and to display that at 60 frames per second, actually probably closer to 90 or 120 frames per second, you're going to need a monster computer. Especially for some of the more cinematic experiences that these headsets are supposed to provide. And unlike phones, there are no carriers out there who are going to subsidize your virtual reality headset. So the final sticker price, it's going to be, you know, probably on the middle end of $2,000. So imagine the adoption rate for virtual reality headsets is going to be a lot closer to the original portable cell phone that looked like a brick rather than the original iPhone, which was already much closer to wide adoption when it was released. That said, pretty exciting time. A lot of content being produced. There are game companies involved. There are movie companies involved. There's going to be a huge amount of content that is going to be native to virtual reality that will launch with these headsets. So it's not as if, though, they're debuting this to the world and then everyone's going to get to work. People have been pretty aggressively working to create these kinds of experiences. And I'm pretty sure we'll be seeing companies preparing experiences where you don't have to buy a headset, but maybe you have a backpack and a headset, and you get to run through some kind of obstacle course. But the obstacle course has been mapped inside this headset to look like the inside of some kind of monster's lair or a futuristic spaceship, and give you an incredibly lifelike recreation of that experience. And I think those things are going to be something that you'll experience long before the average person you know has an Oculus Rift sitting in their living room. We're probably a few years away from the computing power being cheap enough, the goggles being mass-produced, being smaller, lighter, easier to adjust, the definition of the screens being better. All of these things will improve rapidly. They're taking advantage of the supply chain of cell phones and smartphones, which have miniaturized a lot of components and made them really, really power efficient and power dense. And a few more cycles of innovation and releases of more powerful phone hardware also means that this kind of hardware in your virtual reality headset is going to get smaller, it's going to get cheaper, and it's going to get more powerful. Now, all of this is to say nothing of augmented reality, which is not ready for prime time, but a lot of the technical issues that people suspected they would have with this technology is not so much an issue. At TED, very recently, several companies debuted their augmented reality experiences. HoloLens from Microsoft had a very in-depth demo of how they can project basically another world into your living room, how you can have a virtual video conference where it looks as if though you are standing next to a person who is calling in from who knows where across the country with very low latency. These experiences are probably not that far away. I think within 5 years, you're going to see some kind of consumer version of this headset. But unlike the Google Glass, which was an unmarked disaster, or a very marked disaster, actually, for Google, these goggles and these headsets are attempting something very different. They're not trying to put a user interface near your eye that has no relation to what is actually going on in the world around you. They're either capturing your entire field of vision and placing you in an entirely different world, or they are placing the UI inside your world, as if though these UI elements are free-floating in front of you. So you won't have the effect that many Google Glass users had of looking like they were staring off into space in order to focus on the tiny screen that was up in the corner of their vision. Instead, what you will be looking at will very firmly look like it exists in the real world in front of you, which may or may not seem less creepy when these people are wearing these headsets. But they're targeting a very different experience, and it's going to be very much more immersive and maybe even more disconcerting, but certainly a more powerful experience, and the opportunities are endless. Imagine projecting a couch into your living room. You don't have to go into the store to see the couch, measure it with measuring tape, and then kind of try to picture in your head how exactly it's going to fit in your living room. Imagine you project an exact replica, size, shape, color, the look of the texture, how it seems in the lighting in your apartment. And you can move it around and rotate it in 3D space in your vision and see exactly how it's going to fit in your living room. And that is an extremely mundane example, but you can take that and apply it to tons of different experiences, and you can see that the opportunities are nearly endless. Thanks so much for tuning in to what has turned into episode 11 of Well, Don't Just Stand There. I'm happy to be back, and hopefully we'll be seeing these coming out at a much more regular interval. And the world is only getting weirder, so there will definitely be stuff for me to talk about. Until next time, I'm Johan. You can catch me on Twitter at @JohanBenedict or my website, johancodes.com. Until next time. Take care. Bye-bye. Music provided under Creative Commons license by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.